Welcome to Haunted History Chronicles, the podcast where we unravel the mysteries of the past, one ghostly tale at a time. I'm your host, Michelle, and I'm thrilled to be your guide on this eerie journey through the pages of history. Picture this, a realm where the supernatural intertwines with the annals of time, where the echoes of the past reverberate through haunted corridors and forgotten landscapes. That's the realm we invite you to explore with us. Each episode will unearth stories, long-buried secrets, dark folklore, tales of the macabre, and discuss parapsychology topics. From ancient legends to more recent enigmas, we're delving deep into locations and accounts all around the globe, with guests joining me along the way. But this podcast is also about building a community of curious minds like you. Join the podcast on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, to share your own ghostly encounters, theories, and historical curiosities. Feel free to share with friends and family. The links are conveniently placed in the description for easy access. So whether you're a history buff with a taste for the supernatural, or a paranormal enthusiast with a thirst for knowledge, Haunted History Chronicles is your passport to the other side. Get ready for a ride through the corridors of time, where history and the supernatural converge, because every ghost has a story, and every story has a history. And now, let's introduce today's podcast, or guest. Today we are joined by a true luminary in the world of paranormal investigation, the one and only Kev Kerr. Kev has been a dedicated researcher of the paranormal since his youth, driven by a passion to uncover the truth that lies beyond our understanding. In 2010, feeling the need to propel the field forward, he took a hands-on approach to his investigations, realizing that the methods in use were often stagnant. From 2013 to 2020, Kev founded the website and blog Pararationalize, a platform dedicated to expanding individuals' comprehension of the paranormal. After a brief sabbatical from the paranormal field, Kev has returned with renewed vigour. He's now actively championing an ethical and scientific approach to paranormal investigation through his presence on social media, engaging TikToks, thought-provoking conference talks, and appearances on various podcasts and radio shows. Today, Kev is here to unravel the secrets behind the causes of common hauntings. Join us as we embark on a journey to understand the unexplained, dissecting the mysteries that linger between the realms of the living and the departed. Get ready to peer into the unknown with Kev Kerr. Without further ado, let's unlock the gates to the paranormal and say hello to our guest. Hi Kev, thank you so much for joining me this evening.
No problem at all.
Do you want to just start by introducing yourself and maybe give a little bit of context, your background within the paranormal?
Yeah, so I'm Kev Kerr. I've been investigating the paranormal for about 15 years now. And prior to that, I was completely obsessed with every paranormal book or ghost book I could get my hands on at the time, and I started from a really young age, so it was, you know, as soon as I could read, really. I managed to get my hands on ghost books probably like 4 or 5 years of age. But the thing for me was, it was nice reading about all these things. As time went on, you kind of realize there's not much new that was coming out of it, so I went into the field myself, became a paranormal investigator, and sort of wanted to see for myself what, you know, the likes of Harry Price was experiencing and all these wonderful people that I read about. So I ended up joining a local team called Gloucester Paranormal Research, run by a guy called Dwayne Suter. And I wanted the name Gloucester Paranormal Research, and he already had it. And it turned out he had only started about 2 weeks prior. So it was really good timing. I'd invested a lot of money into a lot of equipment and things that I believed I needed at the time. And I went out on the road into different locations. And then they've become known as the Debunkinator, because I already had that knowledge about the paranormal behind me and a very critical thinking. It kind of worked really well for me. So I went on to things like the SPR and ASAP, so the Association of Scientific Study of Anomalous Phenomena, and started sort of working on my own and created a thing called Power Rationalize, which went on for a long time, which was a kind of blog / information center, which started very, I say aggressively, it's probably the way to describe it. I was very unhappy with what I saw in the field. So I went from doing that, and that became me being much more approachable. And then I began to set up, because I was working alongside Team Impact, which was Paul Hobday. And basically, we started to make the UK Paranormal Society. But whilst that was being made, I had my first child, so I couldn't really put the time that it deserved into it, so I had to step back, unfortunately. They're doing very wonderful. I believe you've had him on the show as well. And then I've come back as just Kevcur Paranormal. So nice and easy, that's who I am. And I like to help teams to do things better, work more ethically. I like to try and advise as many people as possible on the best ways to perform experiments, or like to advise on how we can create a ghost, or how we can be in a situation where we might not necessarily be experiencing the paranormal, and actually there's lots of answers we got to consider before we get there, which is liked by quite a few, as much as this, you know, liked and liked by quite a lot of people at the same time. But personally, I feel I've got enough information and experience to be able to put myself into that position. As I say, there's a few people in the paranormal that don't agree with my approach. But the most important thing for me is obviously safety for people and being ethical and no one getting hurt by the paranormal in that sense.
And this is precisely why I really wanted the chance to actually to talk to you and have you share some of this knowledge and really kind of look at it from this perspective, because it's something I've mentioned on various podcasts in the past. It's almost this sense of, if you debunk things, if you are somewhat skeptical and you're not 100% believing that everything that is being experienced is paranormal, that somehow that is really something disgusting and the dirty word, and that somehow means you're not a true paranormal investigator or believer or all of those things, you're kind of pushed to the side. And I think it was Chris Howley who brought this up on a podcast in the past, where he said he thinks of it as a triangle and you have to be in the middle. You can't be completely one thing or completely the other. You have to be open to both. And I think that's all well and good saying that, but I don't think there is enough of highlighting some of the science, the thinking, the approaches, the thoughts that happens when being skeptical. Still, we see far too much of this, everything being highlighted and showcased as, well, this is this and this is that, and then nothing being substantive behind that, or no other explanation given. And if it is, it's just this very kind of off the cuff remark that people will hear but don't necessarily understand, well, why are you saying it's that as an explanation? Why can't it be this? There's no kind of substance to the comment that they're saying if trying to explain something away, in the same way that if they're trying to prove something, they'll have a million things to say about why it's something paranormal. And again, I just think it's something very much missing for people, whether that's investigators or just someone experiencing something and trying to understand what's happening or what could be happening. It's about putting that information out there, I think.
It works on so many levels. So, you know, belief systems that people have, they have for a reason, to protect themselves or to protect an ideology that they have. And the same with skeptics, you know, they try to protect their opinion and protect their way of doing things. And what I'd learned sort of coming back into the paranormal recently, or more actually, when I started pararationalize, was I was attacking left, right, and center. I was, you know, going for these groups and going for these different people who are doing this methodology with no real understanding of the fact that of why they're doing it. And over time, I began to learn why these people, you know, were doing it and why they were relying on their belief systems, and actually they feel it works, so that's what they do. And then this time, when I've sort of returned after, you know, becoming a dad, and now I've finally got a bit of time to kind of come back into it, is I've taken a much more open-minded approach. So I've been right in the middle of the believers and right in the middle of the paranormal community. I haven't islanded myself, as skeptics tend to do, because they kind of feel attacked every time they want to explain something, or feel like they need to fight. I've just kind of molded openly and become actually open-minded to all different belief systems, all different reasons, like why these individuals might do things a certain way, or to understand their point of view, and then have a healthy debate backwards and forwards, which always ends in this. It's quite a lovely situation where people go, yeah, actually, I see your logic there. And the same for me. I go, I see exactly why you're doing that. And in the community, it's been, you know, a bit like a war zone, really. You know, and kind of who's right and who's wrong, and this is the best way, and this gets results. And it's like, you know, a lot of people say the scientific community doesn't want anything to do with the paranormal. It's like, well, actually, a lot of the science that explains a lot of the paranormal just isn't labeled as paranormal. You know, a lot of these journals and things aren't under the paranormal heading. They're under psychology, or they're under type of engineering, or they're, you know, looking at electrical engineering in regards to, what's it called, induced voltages and things in cables. And, you know, this isn't paranormal. So we won't Google this or find this kind of thing out. And for me, as a skeptic, it's really interesting to go into all those different fields and realize that there's something very normal that could be paranormal. And actually, I get more excited when I find that than I do about finding probably something that possibly is paranormal.
It's about being better prepared, having more information, having a fuller picture, if you like. And I think when you can then say, well, actually, this could be this or this, or it could just be something as simple as this, it means that if you then have something where it is really difficult to explain, that's the bit that then is the bit that you can really get your teeth into to try and understand what could be happening there. And yeah, it prompts other investigation. And I think you need to be able to have this kind of mindset and this knowledge. I think that's the key thing, for this to be so much more inclusive, and these types of thinking coming together and these types of approaches coming together. Because when you have that, I think you have a very balanced investigation,
yeah,
that allows you to really get into the teeth of it, the nitty gritty of it, and to really start to analyze. And I think that is the key takeaway for me, that investigating, it is really truly about trying to analyze what's happening. The science of it, to understand the experience from a psychological perspective, from the perspective of the paranormal. There's so many different lenses and ways into that you want to try and understand. But it's more than what you just see of, well, that's just a demon, that's a ghost, that's this. And, you know, it's trying to, I think, raise this up, you know, elevate this up, because it's such an important aspect. Like I mentioned a little while ago, it's the bit that just gets put out there and not really evaluated and shared, and that knowledge given to everybody. And I think so much of the problem is actually people just don't know about this. And that's not through any other reason, that sometimes this knowledge is safeguarded. And it's certainly not put out there on most TV screens in the shows that they're watching. 100%. And that's a problem. That's a problem.
But that's what I found with Pararationalize. So when the website was live, I'd have this big write-up, say I was talking about something that causes, you know, let's say like hypnagogia or something, I was writing a piece on it. I would write this super long piece about hypnagogia, and then I'd have this super long additional reading list and the super long references, And I'll be honest, I'm someone who likes to read, but I probably wouldn't have read that kind of medium. Nowadays, we like quick, simple, easy, you know, flash of information, interesting discussion, that kind of thing. And that's why I started Kevcur Paranormal, where I started doing TikTok videos, because they're quick, they're easy, it's a quick explanation, there's no heaviness behind it. It's a thought process that people can take for themselves. And it seems to be definitely the way forward in kind of teaching individuals who are first coming into, and I say when they're first coming into the paranormal, because most people are very stuck in their ways. But what will happen is those new investigators are coming through with better methodologies or better ways of doing things. And slowly that will increase within the paranormal field and almost drown out a lot of the unethical behaviors and things that are within the paranormal. So that's really why Kevcur Paranormal has gone from Pararationalize, which was this big, you know, academic as much as possible, got to have references, got to show all your workings out, to this is that, you know, this is caused by this, and kind of having those snippets of information in a hope that people will absorb them easier.
Yeah, bite-sized chunks can be really powerful, I think. And yeah, again, it's just, it's providing that information in different means and different ways, because, you know, as someone who has that educational background, you know, we do absorb things differently. We have different ways of taking information, whether it's mm-hmm. through hearing it, physically doing it, you know, seeing it. I mean, there's just so many different ways that someone's brain is going to absorb that information.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, I'm someone that's an avid reader. I love reading. But some of the material on some of these subject matters, you almost need to have 10 degrees behind you to get from one part of the book to the other.
That's exactly it.
And so it is kind of being able to condense some of that into, like we've been talking about, these bite-sized chunks that makes it easy to digest. And again, this is why I think it's great to have the chance to talk to you and to highlight some of that and some of the thinking behind what could possibly be behind someone's haunting, so that we can start to kind of really analyse what that could be, not just what it's assumed to be. And so, you know, starting from that premise, it might be kind of worth just kind of starting from very basic level in terms of, you know, what things could be in the home, the house itself, the, you know, the environment, if you like, that maybe we should be considering more as mm-hmm. part of that process as an investigator or as someone maybe experiencing something, if they're listening and they're having something that they can't explain that's happening in their own home.
So what I did on Pararationalize, because I used to always receive emails on a daily basis or messages to of people asking for help, it was very difficult because obviously it's an unpaid position, it's voluntary, and there's only a certain amount of time you can really put into it. And I was predominantly a residential investigator, so I would deal with residential cases where either the teams have been in and been involved and done some damage, or someone had been in and made the situation 100 times worse, and then I would go in kind of as a follow-up. So what I started to do is I actually put a page up that explained the basics of, like, in a household, what you might be experiencing. So I'd say, before you contact me, please read through this section and take a look at if these things match up. So, like, for example, TV turning on its own. You know, when was the last time you changed the batteries on your remote control? And it seems like the most ridiculous thing ever, but if your batteries are dying and your remote control isn't receiving enough energy from those batteries, it can kind of glitch. So it just send out a signal and all of a sudden your TV will turn on its own. Also, things like, is your TV situated near a window, you know, where it's to an open window where maybe someone else's remote control could be interacting with your TV? Sounds like a strange thing. Things like forgetfulness. So are you finding random objects have gone missing and they turn up in another place? A lot of people say that's a poltergeist, when actually we are so driven by the autonomy of our brain. Our brain just allows us to do all these things without really registering what we're doing, and actually, is that happening? So is there age-related concerns there? Is there a possibility that, you know, you're stressed or tired, and you're not realizing that you're the one actually moving things? Or is there someone out in the house moving things? So automatically people think, oh, I've got a poltergeist. Or they walk out of the kitchen, they walk back in, and the cupboard's open. And they're like, that wasn't open. And you think, actually, you quite easily could have opened it, got distracted or been doing something and just walked out the kitchen completely unaware that you've even done it. My messages dropped to about, I think, one or two a month after putting out that, like, a list, because it explained about the temperature changes in the house. You know, are you hearing footsteps upstairs as we're going into nighttime? So depending on what time that's happening. And if so, why not log it down? Every time you hear it, what time it is, what date it is, what you heard, where you heard it, and then again the next day and the next day, and then all of a sudden at 7:35 each night, there's footsteps coming across the top of the house. Well, actually, that's the joists. You know, the building itself is adjusting to the temperature change outside and inside, and it goes across the joists, which are all 600 mil separate. Which gives you footsteps, bum, 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 as they adjust into themselves. So it's having that mindset and allowing the person who's experiencing it to almost learn to critically think without saying you must critically think. So electronics is a big one. So people might experience kettles switching on their own. They might have a situation, as I said, with TVs, stereos turning on their own. Lights flickering. You know, when was the last time your electrics were checked in the house? And genuinely, there'll be more of an issue of that's quite an easy thing to fix, but there could be a situation where, you know, you have loose wiring or something somewhere which is actually quite dangerous. So at the same time, carbon monoxide detectors. Do you have carbon monoxide detectors in your home? Because those small amounts of carbon monoxide, they're not going to knock you out in one go. You're going to hallucinate things. You're going to get confused. You know, and if you're not in the house constantly all the time, you're almost in a situation where you're going to have those hallucinations. Like black mold creates hallucinogenic effects if you're obviously living in those surroundings. So that's another one that you've got to think about within the house. Is the environment, say in a terraced building, or are you in a detached house? Is there a possibility it's the neighbours? So my house, I know for a fact, but being an engineer and everything else, that the joists in my house are completely and utterly connected to the joists next door, as in if they walk on their hallway, it sounds like they're walking in mine. And most people would hear that and go, oh my God, and their footsteps are so loud. And some visitors have said, what was that? And I'm like, it's just the neighbours. Because I'm aware of that and I can say, okay, I can see that happening. Inside the house is just one of those places that if we feel safe, this goes more into psychological things, if we want to feel safe in our house, and if we're in a situation where we don't feel safe, so a very typical example of a residential investigation is someone usually who's lost their partner or... you know, a single parent, especially who lives on their own, they are worried about the protection of their themselves and their children. So psychologically, all of these noises can become quite a big threat. So they become scary, and once they become scary, we have, you know, issues with the films we watch and the TV shows we watch and that kind of stuff. And the whole idea of what a ghost is and that someone's going to be haunting the house, that allows us to go really in depth into sort of psychological bubble of stress and worry and panic, and then we feel unsafe in our own home, and in doing that and being unsafe in our own home makes those noises worse and more creepy and more worrying, and kids hear it and they're like, what is that? You know, it's like it's okay, it's just that. But if you don't have that answer, you become more creeped out. So just in that time, I've managed to say a list of quite a few things that are quite normal, but are considered paranormal activity. And another one, photos coming off the wall. Everyone has almost an ability to say it flew off the wall. I'm flying off the wall. And it's like, did it? And it's like, yeah, and then it landed on the floor like 2 meters away, when in reality what they experienced was, you know, it fell, no doubt about it, because you can guarantee by the time you notice it's falling, it's already near the floor, and it's probably hit the floor and slid or bounced or it's come quite far. But really, it's just a normal situation where, you know, it could be hung up there for months on end and finally it's given out and it's dropped off. And those details, the memories that we have, it's like, oh, it flew off the wall. And then instantly we change those details in our head to it flew. And so that's why I say to a lot of people to write this, when it happens, just write it down. Just sit down and go, okay, the picture flew off the wall. Okay, did it fly? And they go, yeah. It's like, did it fly? Or did it just drop straight down and it went across the floor? And they're like, well, I'm not sure. It's because we're not absorbing that information. It's a flashbulb memory, and then we're just adjusting the details around it. So that can bring people to believe even further that they're, you know, experiencing a haunting or a ghost or something paranormal.
Hey there. Before we dive back into the podcast episode, I have a quick message for all you devoted listeners. If you've been enjoying the eerie stories and historical mysteries shared on any of the podcast episodes over the last few years, here's your chance to become an even bigger part of the ghostly community. You can now support the show by buying the podcast a virtual coffee. That's right. Just head over to ko-fi.com/hauntedhistorychronicles and treat the podcast to a caffeine boost. Every little bit goes a long way in helping us uncover more haunted histories and share them with you. But wait, there's more. For those who want to dive deeper into the world of the paranormal, consider joining our Patreon family. Our Patreon page is a treasure trove of exclusive content, featuring hundreds of podcasts, both short and long articles, interviews, and other top secret materials you won't find anywhere else. And here's the exciting news. For February, all Patreon members, across all tiers, will receive bonus daily podcasts. It's like a paranormal advent calendar for the entire month. Now is the perfect time to join, support the show, and unlock a growing library of chilling encounters, reports, and in-depth research. Simply visit patreon.com/hauntedhistorychronicles to become a patron today. But wait, I'm not quite done yet. If you're looking to show off your love for the Haunted History Chronicles in other ways, check out our brand new shop. We've got mugs, stickers, clothing, bags, and more, all featuring unique designs inspired by the podcast. So why not visit tpublic.com and the Haunted History Chronicles shop page to snag your spooky swag? Whether it's buying us a coffee, joining me on Patreon, or rocking some Haunted History Chronicles gear, your support keeps the paranormal flames alive. Every small contribution helps me to continue to bring you more guests and deep dive content. All the links to the podcast Ko-fi page, Patreon, and the shop will be in the podcast description notes. You can also find them on our social media pages. So if you're ready to take your Haunted History Chronicles experience to the next level, head on over, show some love, and let's keep those ghostly tales alive. Now, back to the supernatural stories. You won't want to miss what's coming up next.
I think you bring up some really important points of very much the significance of the person involved in that and the influences that, you know, we all have. You know, I think we're in some ways predisposed to that jump scare moment, if you like, which, like you mentioned, heightens that fear. I mean, if we think about films like Poltergeist with the TV turning itself on and off, you know, it's almost, you've seen it in this medium, so therefore what you're experiencing is the same thing. It's it's our brains connecting the, you know, the dot, isn't it? You know, the dots and joining those things up and together, and that's natural. It's a natural thing for us to do. I think our brains do that. We try to rationalize something, and when we have these frames of reference points, which makes it scary, which adds to that fear, when you're already feeling uncertain, like you mentioned, it just keeps accumulating, doesn't it?
Yeah, it becomes a perfect storm. And I did a talk, I say recently, I think back in September, for ASAP Seriously Strange conference, and what I did it on was causes of a common haunting. And one thing I mentioned in there was obviously the way the brain works, but what effects the media has, what we expect to happen. And Alfred Hitchcock was the first filmmaker to really understand that if he can play with normal everyday situations, it makes the film scarier, which obviously just blew up the horror scene, really. It was like, wow, we watch this film, it's so intense, it freaks me out. But then also when I go home, I'm in the same environment that person was in. And in the talk, I give an example of American Werewolf in London, where he's looking in the mirror, which has got like a medicine cabinet type mirror, and he opens the door, and then as he closes it, something appears behind him. And we kind of get almost generational with it, that's like a scary thing that can happen, you know. So suddenly putting on your jumper, and your eyes are covered, and you're kind of in a vulnerable position where you put in the collar over your head, and then suddenly you pull it down and there's something there. Using it really cleverly, using those psychological situations to make really good films and really scary films that make people jump, have become so normal and commonplace that it's become such a normal thing in our own house to be able to imagine those things happening. And if you're vulnerable, and especially if you're psychologically vulnerable, you can really fall into those situations where you become more and more scared in your own environment. I can't even think how many years ago it was now. So I was in a two-bed flat, and the hallway in the middle had no outside lighting. It was completely, if you turn the light off, it was pitch black. So I used it as an opportunity to see if I could create a ghost, which sounds mad, but this is just how my brain works and decides to do things. But basically what I did is I imagined an old woman at the end of the hallway by the front door. So the reason I chose the front door is because that was the only exit from the flat. So then it becomes more of a creepier situation. So it's pitch black in this hallway, and I was finding myself I'd rush to my bedroom door before the living room door closed because the bulb had gone. And I thought, I'm not changing the bulb because I'm going to use this situation. And over time, it was only about 2 weeks to start getting a horrible feeling when I went into the hallway. And bearing in mind, I'm doing this from a skeptical approach, but I'm trying to change my behavior and my thought processes using cognitive behavioral therapy techniques to put myself in a negative position when I'm in there. So I was scared every time I went into the hallway. I think after about 4 or 5 weeks was my first image of the old woman at the end of the hallway. So at the corner of my eye, there was an old woman stood at the end of the hallway. And it was like absolutely terrifying. But at the same time, I knew the situation I was in, I'd created this moment. But it goes to show just how malleable we are. And it was such an interesting, I'd love to do it again, but it was kind of one of those perfect storm moments. I had this very dark alley that was like perfect for exactly what I wanted to do. There was enough room from the living room door to the bedroom door to give me those couple of seconds of darkness to almost allow myself to be scared of the dark and then push into the door to get into the light again. And it was so easily done. And I was doing that consciously as well as subconsciously. But a lot of people are just on a subconscious basis. So it builds so fast and in a very small amount of time until people really experience, you know, if someone said, oh, someone died here. Okay. You know, what do you mean? Oh, so there was an old woman who lived here previous, you know, she passed away in the bed in the main room. And it could be passing information, but that sits in your subconscious and grows.
Well, I think it speaks to the power of the mind and how memories can be created. Experiences can be adjusted based on false memories, and we can be conscious of that or unconscious of that. And I don't think we necessarily understand sometimes the significance of us as human beings and how we react to situations, because, you know, when we think about the memories and the emotions that really take hold, it's those powerful moments, those often moments of real terror or real joy, you know, the kind of the extremes that really stay with us.
Yeah.
But even if we think about how they get distorted over time, the things that we remember or we come to remember because we've changed it somehow, our brains do really funny things. And psychologically, we can create scenarios so easily, like you said, just with these perfect things in place happening around us like a perfect storm. Mm-hmm. And I think it manifests in all parts of our life. I mean, what you're talking about is essentially the Philip experiment, but I think we do it in all kinds of manner of ways. And, you know, people will listen to this story, but I think it's another example of it, how your own fears can play into something. Yeah. I've mentioned on the podcast before, the one thing I'm terrified of is heights, but the second is snakes. They're the two things that are like my death knell. I'm honestly petrified. And when I was at university, the housing that I had kind of a garden area that wrapped around two sides of the house.
Yeah.
And you can imagine, students, the garden was rather overgrown. And there were hedgehogs. So you'd hear rustling from outside a window in the grass. I knew it was hedgehogs. But, you know, as the grass grows and you're having to walk through this area to get out the back gate to go off to university, you know, your brain starts to imagine snakes in the grass.
Yep.
Stupid thought, but then it becomes something that at nighttime you don't want to walk through, or you don't want to walk through the day. And I worked myself up to such a point I couldn't walk through the back garden because I was convinced there were snakes that could be hiding in this long grass, when essentially it was just, you know, a family of hedgehogs. And I was terrified. I was honestly, catapulted into this stratosphere of fear, thinking there were snakes in the garden, which is ridiculous, and I knew it.
But that's a brilliant example in the sense of a lot of people forget that, you know, we got psychological and we have physical. So we have the real world of what's going on, and we can touch it, feel it, anything else, and we have the psychological aspect. But they're two of the same. So it's like you got a situation where, as you say, you're scared of snakes. You knew in your conscious mind that they weren't there, but you still had a physical reaction because in your mind you were believing that there were snakes in there. So it's like if someone had pushed you out into the grass, you would have went into full panic. And I think a lot of people forget that everything we do is a meld over of psychological and physical, from walking, breathing, talking, looking around with our eyes. You know, they are commands that are sent from our brain and create the physical element. So there's a thing called hyperarousal. So it sounds like a very, very strange thing, but it's when you get panicky like that and you begin to, like, some people fall into like anxiety attacks and things. Other people just kind of, you know, sweat a little bit or just breathe and calm down and they're fine again. But those physical elements, things that happen in paranormal situations. So that panic, that like sudden, oh, I need to catch my breath and my heart's going a bit faster, or I'm sweating, or my palms have gone sweaty, that kind of thing. It's called hyperarousal, but it's it also begins to panic you because you think, what is something affecting me? And especially if you believe in things like possession, or you believe in like energy withdrawal from an individual to a spirit or whatever, you can instantly begin to believe that that's what's happened to you. And it's the same with you when you think about the snakes, and all of a sudden you're physically changing what you're doing, not only by not stepping in that area, but also from the physical effects that are happening to you. And I think it's really important for people to understand that those two things, psychological and physical, are two of the same things. It's just commanded by your mind. and what you're thinking, feeling, or you expect to happen.
Absolutely. Gosh, absolutely. Completely 100%. And, you know, again, I think you touched on something so important, which is, again, some of the influences that we have and the things that the narratives that are put out there about attachments and all of this kind of this dangerous stuff that we should be frightened of. It's almost like talking about the paranormal in the field is supposed to be something scary rather than just something that can be a normal, rational conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think it's really counterproductive because I think it then generates this kind of fear. And it's then like, it's just this perfect storm. And, you know, I've been on many investigations with Bill and Sean, who are both part of the UK Paranormal Society. Mm-hmm. And they used to give this really wonderful talk, which I think, again, sums it up. And you can imagine Bill with his sense of humour as he has. You know, he would talk about the Ouija board and, you know, the perception that if you open things up, it's got to be closed down properly and people experiencing and feeling like ghosts are following them home and and then them looking for things to try and show that something's followed them home because they're frightened that, you know, they're unsure. And he always talked about the cat, you know, if the cat looks funny at you after you've done a paranormal investigation, it doesn't mean that the spirit's gone home and your home is now possessed. If the cat starts peeing on the rug, I think is the one that you use. But I think it is that, again, it's, we can so easily get into a fixed mindset that something is something without stepping back and going, hang on a minute, is it just because the cat needs X, Y, or Z? Or, you know, am I feeling uncertain and unsure because of I'm tired, you know, I haven't been sleeping well, or my boss at work is giving me grief and I'm kind of stressed and anxious. You know, we don't start unpicking some of that. And again, I think this is where, you know, you're saying things like document it, keep a journal, really keep an eye on your own emotional sense, your feelings, what's happening at work, what's happening with your sleep, how tired you are. Are you getting out and being with friends? You know, all of these things, alongside documenting also what you're experiencing. I think once you start actually reflecting and being able to put things down in that way, I think it enables you sometimes to see things with less of the emotion that keeps you in that state of hyper-arousal, of looking then, so that anything you then see is something scary. Because for the first time, you may be starting to notice these things that you haven't heard in your own house before, for example.
Yeah, and it's funny that you use the sort of the Ouija there. Like I did a post when I was doing Power Rationalize about the dangers of the Ouija board, and I think a lot of people read it because they wanted to hear about demons and all kinds of stuff. And actually, the whole post was about the psychological damage to individuals who perform and use the Ouija board. And why, you know, so it's exactly as you said, you take away, and as Bill said, you know, you walk away from a Ouija board believing there could be attachment or something's come through a portal or all of those things. And what was important to me is that mediums do exactly what Bill said, you know, is to explain that it doesn't mean that's what's happened, you know, especially when you're dealing with the public, because you can almost start a haunting for someone just by doing that, just by saying, oh, we're going to do a Ouija board, this will be fun. And then they go home, and some people are very good at critical thought. They can just kind of go, meh, whatever, you know, it was good fun, get on with it, and not really think about it ever again. And some people are quite fragile. You know, some people are fragile mentally, so the same way some people are fragile physically. And that's not a dig at anyone who is. It's just we are very different. Everyone is a different person. And some people can go away from a ghost hunt or an investigation or a public night and believe that something's followed them. And it's one of those situations where it's, I've been doing this 15 years and I wish they'd follow me because it will save me so much money. You know, I can investigate in my own house then and it'd be like, fine, happy days, you know. But it doesn't happen. It's not a thing that happens. It is always a psychological aspects that comes from that hyper arousal and being in that situation. And you kind of it's important. If you're in a position of authority, when you're doing a public night, or, you know, when we have a team, we know the team. They're there for that reason. Some of them might openly say they're not comfortable with doing a Ouija board. And you go, okay, that's fine. Are you sure you don't want to? It's not a problem. Or members of the public would be like, I don't want to do it. And they'll have a friend go, come on, you know, you want to. And it's being able to say to them, look, you can do it. It's not a problem. And I promise you, you'll be perfectly safe. I've done X amount of hundreds of them. But if you want, once we're complete, I'll go through the logical aspects of what a Ouija board really is. And I will discuss things like the ideomotor effect and how, you know, this information comes forward from the subconscious and all this kind of stuff, just to ensure that they don't go home negative. You know, it's almost like arming them for the battle that their subconscious is going to give them when they get home.
I think that just comes full circle to what we were saying, which is, mm-hmm. you know, all too often, 100% of what people are fed within this kind of field, mm-hmm. as entertainment, as films, as TV shows, as investigations that people might be going on, you know, nearly 100% of the time, what people are getting is that psychological arming of, well, it is only going to be this. And again, it comes back to what we were saying, there isn't enough of highlighting, well, actually, there can be other things at play. Let's mm-hmm. talk about those as much as what it could also be in terms of something paranormal. It's kind of making both normal, I think. and I think that's really important.
Because it's, I call it the fog. I've always called it the fog, the paranormal fog. And I sort of noticed it, especially when I came into the actual practical field. And it's a mass amount of information that comes from people just thrown out there, you know. And it's things like when it comes to orbs, and new people come in and they believe in orbs, so they start doing the same cycle that the previous people were doing, but they've now learned and moved on and so on. And that's why I try and catch people when they first come into the, I like to meet people when they first come into the field, or they like try to traffic them through my information to say, look, we already know all this stuff, you know, this is the answer. Let's look at the next steps. You know, what else can we look at? What can we do differently? But that fog is just terrible, because that fog grows on an almost daily basis. And there's just, it's like a big, it's like a great fire of London. You know, and the people who are already in the paranormal are the firefighters trying to put the fire out, and it just keeps going and keeps going, because it's one of those situations where people just keep throwing just any photo of any blip or any, you know, orb or a streak across the photograph or that kind of thing, throwing it out there, found a ghost, and that information moves really quickly, whereas someone who is, say, doing it properly would critically think, see that photo and say, oh, I can see that's a, you know, a slow shutter or whatever's going on. And it doesn't even become paranormal. It doesn't even start. But I do find that fog is almost impossible to fight. And again, the only way I can find to change that is to filter people through that logical process into the paranormal.
Adding this other perspective, because I think it's a field that is completely saturated with an awful lot of experiences that, again, with things like YouTube and podcasts like my own, there's so many platforms and means and ways that this now can become something that people can consume. And in one sense, that's a great thing. But in another sense, it does mean that certain things do just continually get replicated and put out there. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to kind of, like you said, filter other things into that. I think it's perfectly fine to have different voices within this community that helps to understand the bigger picture. And for me, that is really what I would want from the paranormal community and from the discussion, is that it's okay to have different perspectives. It's okay to have different approaches. It's okay to have conversations. That's what should be happening for this to be a truly healthy environment. We can actually start to add things to what has happened before. So we're not just doing the same thing all the time and thinking the same thing and putting out the same stuff. You know, it's about really critically analysing all aspects, including ourselves and what we could be contributing falsely, inadvertently, to what's happening or being shared.
Yeah. So a really weird analogy, and it might be a bit odd for those who aren't into metal music. So within the metal community, I don't know if you've ever seen in a metal crowd, they do a mosh pit.
Yep.
And it looks crazy.
It looks crazy and fun.
But it just is, you know, you think, God, what are they doing? They're gonna hurt each other like badly. And anyone who's looking in from the outside of the community, the scene, looks at it and goes, they're hurting each other. Like, how, this is crazy. Why would you ever do that? But inside that mosh pit, there are rules. You're not going around punching everyone. You're bouncing into each other. And if anyone falls, everyone stops and helps each other up. And like, there's a big camaraderie and love in this crazy pile of people that from the outside perspective is utter madness, you know. And for someone outside of the paranormal, if they've even got an interest, you know, sort of like myself that went, right, I'm going out in the field, let's go and put all of this read into some good use. To suddenly find themselves in that situation, they're going to go in and they're going to go into the mosh pit and they're going to start punching people and fighting. And it's like, none of us are fighting. You know, none of us are doing it. Like, you don't understand the circle you've walked into. So if you're someone who have been watching YouTube, watching TikToks, watching various things on social media or loving the paranormal TV shows and everything else, and you step out into the field with no real knowledge of what's going on, you become that person that stepped into the mosh pit and began fighting people. And it's like, whoa, 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 it looks like that's what we're doing, but in reality we've done that. That's all, like, what we need to be doing now is you need to be following us, who have rules and we have ways of doing things, and you need to come in and rely on other people to give you that message and understand that you don't know everything about the paranormal because you've done all this reading or watched all these different shows. You now have to find out what it is you want to achieve and want to do in the paranormal. And part of the original UK Paranormal Society was being able to have all of that information at hand and almost be able to point people in the right direction and give people the right information and try and almost clear that fog before we get in there. And it's such a weird analogy, I know, but that's what it reminds me of, is that kind of, you know, misunderstanding for someone who is not in the paranormal to suddenly come in. And then every time someone does, we've almost got to channel them and say, you know, come on, follow us this way. And I still remember sat with a Sony Handycam, night vision Handycam, and an orb coming up on screen. Oh, bloody hell, it was an orb. Didn't believe in them, but I saw one on the camera. I was like, oh, I didn't expect to. And, you know, my expectation was, well, go to a haunted location with a camera, like ghosts, you know, they're probably going to, if it happens, it's going to happen. When in reality, you know, you could be sat there in 100 different locations and have absolute zero happen. But people try to find it then, and they go, oh, well, that could have been a ghost, or they want to do it for some attention, or they want, I suppose it's just their different objective of what they want to achieve.
No, but I think it's valid. And I think it's also valid to reiterate the importance to kind of become involved and become aware of some of these communities, like the UK Paranormal Society, like SBR, ASAP, and other means like that, because you don't get a guidebook, you know. Yeah. You don't get some of the other types of messaging. And I think that's, it's important to know that it is out there. I think sometimes some of these groups could really put themselves out there in a way that helps people to know that they're there. You know, yeah. I don't think they always do enough to shout and kind of dance and do all the things that grab the attention and get people to them. And I think that's sometimes something that gets lost. They just quietly get on and they do it. But what you've got is this fast moving machine, this fog that you mentioned, that just yeah, it just takes over. And so these fantastic groups that really are trying to disseminate information can sometimes just get lost. They just get
overwhelmed and you know, dissolve in that. So they're still working, they're still going to these different locations, but they just keep themselves to themselves.
Yeah.
Or they island themselves. And it's something that we did with GPR. You know, it was kind of, you know, do we want to go out big on social media? And so it's like, not really. We want to investigate and do it that way. So we kind of kept ourselves to ourselves for the majority of the time and chose to island ourselves off. But we were quite lucky because we had such a mixture of brains involved in that. But it was like me as a skeptic and critical thinking, Dwayne being very open-minded, his daughter Nag, she was like quite a believer and she wanted to have an experience. There was Rachel, who was like a Wiccan. And so it's like we had that backwards and forwards conversations, you know, with things. But staying islanded was so much easier than facing the traffic, should I say, of the paranormal, which now is probably tenfold what it was then, easily.
Absolutely.
And it, the likes of Travel Channel and these producers and things that want to make these paranormal TV shows, and obviously they want the entertainment, which is a given, you know, it is what it is. But I truly believe there is a lot to be said about doing a TV show with an actual skeptic. You know, Most Haunted done it with Kieran, and it seems to be a forgotten part of the entertainment. You know, people want to see ghosts, and I've always said, no, they don't. There's usually two people sat in that living room watching the thing, and one of them's usually the wife who's really into the paranormal, and the partner sat there and going, no, that's rubbish because of this. But you can sell to both. You could get 100% coverage by selling to both of those people sat on the sofa watching that TV or that channel to say, okay, this is what the paranormal aspect is, but actually on a skeptical level, it could also be this, and this. And so many producers out there are petrified to say it could be this.
I mean, I hope it's starting to change. I think things like the success of Uncanny, where they basically pitch it as that, don't they? Team skeptic, exactly. Team believer. You know, you've got things like that. Shows that Kate Sherrell has been involved in with Jack Osborne, I think has helped to also put things like that across. You know, I think we're starting to see some of it come through. Corinne and the documentary with Guy Gilbert, My Ghostly Footsteps, all this kind of stuff coming out and being put out there, I think is just fantastic, because again, it's just something else being woven into this really big picture that just allows you to see something a little bit different, this other approach, these other possibilities. And again, all I'm saying is I don't think it's wrong to widen up the discussion, to open up the conversation, and to look at things critically from different points of view and perspectives, to really try and understand and further things on. I think that's really beneficial.
And this is what I found, sort of, as I said, when I've come back into the paranormal this time, I was a bit shocked by a comment someone made to me. Where was I? Fort Whitley. And they said, oh, you're actually a really nice person. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm lovely. Like, okay. And they said, no, I've seen what you do and everything else, and I like what you do, but you seem really, you know, aggressive. And I thought, oh, like, do I? Yeah, but you're, I was almost, I suppose in their heads, they'd seen me go into detail on topics and go in debates with people and, you know, fight a corner for things, and almost thought it'd be very difficult to talk to me because I know it all, if that makes sense, or like I was a bit of a know-it-all. But I don't know it all. I'm far from, and none of us really do. You know, I just know of all these different theories and all these different, you know, ideas that come from investigators through generations. But that doesn't mean I know everything at all. And so when I came back this time, I really opened myself up to the community and opened myself up to, anyone can sort of turn around to me, actually, you're wrong. And I say, that's fine. I'm like, why am I wrong? And you can argue with me if you want, but I'm not going to argue back. I just want that discussion. And I went to the Parameet from the Haunted Antiques place up north. They do the Parameet every year. And it was lovely because I'd been off for a long time and I was up sort of more northern than I usually would, and I didn't really know anyone and no one really knew me, and it was lovely because no one's persona changed on the idea that I was a skeptic. So I was able to have these really open discussions about people's beliefs and what they experience. And it was amazing. People were so open because they didn't think I was automatically going to shoot down their theory or what they think, because I no longer existed in the field. It was incredible. And ever since then, I've just been completely open to let's try it. The same as if I go on investigations or anything else, as long as it's not residential, because that, as far as I'm concerned, there is a limit of what we can do regardless, because you're worried more about the individual's care than you are about finding any kind of evidence. But if you're investigating a location, you know, a public location in that sense, to actually just go, yeah, try that. If someone could turn around and say, I believe that SpongeBob SquarePants theme tune creates paranormal activity, I thought there was only one way to test it, so let's do it.
Yeah, let's try it out. Let's investigate it. Yeah.
And it's like, and then after, you know, 3 hours of doing that, and we say it's made absolutely zero difference to any of the thing. And we can turn around and make that agreement to say, good try though. You know, maybe try another location if you want to, but it hasn't worked.
Yeah. Here's some actual empirical evidence that we've got. Mm-hmm. Let's keep adding to it. You know, if we still think it's a valid theory to keep testing, let's keep going. Or let's try adding something to it. You know, again, it's that science aspect. And again, I just think it's kind of coming back to that it's okay to do that. And it's okay to have the debate. You know, it's not about shooting someone else's ideas down, and it's not about them wanting to return the favor like a jibe. It's actually let's have this kind of round table approach of really knocking heads together and really kind of seeing what we can come up with by investigating. That's what it should be about. Or it should be.
It's like, you know, cat balls was a big thing recently. People using cat balls to try and, you know, get something to interact with them. And, you know, people have a really strong opinion of bloody cat balls or whatever they want to say about them. And some other people are like, I love them, I use them all the time. And it's like, I kind of sit on the fence. I think they're mildly ingenious, you know, in a world where we're, well, like hundreds of pounds for a really simple piece of equipment, just because it's used in the paranormal investigation. You know, it costs £10 to make, but it's sold for hundreds. And it's like, in that world, it shows that the community are really thinking about what they can do, because people can't shell out £300 for, you know, an obelisk or something like that. That, okay, let's see if this works and communicate. And people start using them, and because they're on camera and they're on YouTube or different things, people start buying them, and then lo and behold, the price starts to rise. But with cat balls, it's wildly ingenious. You know, you technically got yourself a motion sensor that was really quite sensitive. And it sits there, and if it could work as a trigger object, or it could work as picking up on very small, minute vibrations from shouting and that kind of stuff. And it has a mass amount of flaws, but the fact that mindset's in place to actually engineer that and say, yeah, it might be a cat ball, but it's actually sensitive to touch and it's sensitive to the environment. So can we use that to investigate the paranormal? Well, actually, yeah, you know. A lot of controls to be put into place, but you can utilize that to see if something can communicate that way. And that's the difference in my mindset now, whereas I used to kind of get the sword out and everything else and just go mad and say, right, why are you using a cat ball to investigate the paranormal? It's ridiculous. Whereas actually, if you think about it, and on this logical sense, it's quite an interesting instrument. It's cheap, it's easy to use, everyone can get hold of them. But let's look at the controls. Like one of the TikToks I've got coming up soon is controls for the use of a cat ball. Because there's things that set them off that are normal. So let's put some controls in place to see if we can stop that from happening, to see if we could get a result. But yeah, sorry, I keep going off on nice little rants.
No, but I think it's a perfect kind of tangent, because again, I think it highlights this missing part, which is there are all these apps and there are all these different devices. And again, they are shown quite freely in investigations, whether that be on the television screen or maybe if you're going out into, say, group investigation, a ghost hunt. But actually, most people really don't understand how the devices work. Mm-hmm. They're never really shown how to use them and the controls that should be put in place to really try and minimize some of the things that could be influencing it kind of doing what it needs to do. And yeah, again, just not having those discussions of, well, how can you safeguard against some of that? Are there other things that you can put into place that you can use to verify that experience or debunk what it is that you're seeing? Again, we don't have those kinds of discussions. And the information about how these things are made, their flaws, aren't really published. And again, that just means if you're an investigator, if you're someone interested in the paranormal, you're missing a chunk of information. Where do you get that from? Where do you go for that? Where is it? You know, it's not easily something found. And again, that's part of the problem, I think. We see them being used all the time, but we're never shown how to use them. It kind of is like my car. I know there's places where you have to put oil, but if you don't show me how to do it, I'm not going to know.
That's it. Or when you need to and how you need to and all sorts.
Yeah. For years, I didn't know where the dipstick was because nobody showed me. It's that. Like, can we please just make it something a bit more logical so that actually we are just better armed? We're kind of resourced better to do a better job, quite frankly.
I've always said it in the sense of, so I've spent a lot of my career in construction, you know, and we in construction as a basic, we need our CSCS card. And that says that we're not competent or experienced, but we understand the basics of, say, health and safety on a construction site. And it's a touchscreen test. And obviously ASAP do their investigator training and things like that. But it's obviously it's catching people when they first come in to go, but I go through the basics. And I don't think there's anyone out there or any part of the UK Paranormal Society was, you know, the idea of maybe giving training in the early days, before obviously requiring charitable status and things, was like, would it not be good to give a basic introduction to paranormal investigation? You know, what these things are, why EMF, what counts as an EVP, what kind of recorders, what they could be, or you could do a 2-day long course. With someone with a genuine interest in the paranormal, you could do an introduction to. But like at the moment, so these are two things I live by, and I'm sort of saying it now while I'm being recorded, so that if someone is listening to this and they're interested in joining paranormal investigation, obviously the SPR, Steve Parsons, bless him, has written the guidance notes for investigators of spontaneous cases. And basically, it talks about like apparitions, hauntings, poltergeists, all that kind of phenomena. And at the same time, so this is like £9, I think like £9.99 or £15 for both books on the SPR's website. But they're not massive books. They're not like, you know, a big, here's the guide to paranormal investigation and slam it down on the table. These are, you know, relatively small books. But they've also got the using equipments. So again, it's all about apparitions, haunting, poltergeists, etc. But it goes through everything from recording to like recording EVPs or what you do with your recorder and how it works, how the microphones work. And it's smaller than most of the books in my bookshelf. And it's got the most easiest and simple things, from choosing what camera do you want to choose? You know, this information is there, but again, it also comes down to these things like ASAP and SPR. I learned about ASAP. Bearing in mind, I was massively interested. I know about the SPR because I always wanted to be on the spontaneous case committee since I was God knows what age. And it was like, I read about it all the time. It was like, that was one of my childhood dreams. So I've had offers since and not taken it up. So, but the SPR are renowned to be more academic and heavy. A lot of their members are professors and that kind of stuff. They don't really talk to the everyday person who wants to be involved in the paranormal, where the everyday passion, should I say, that you get from these individuals who, you know, have a hobby level interest, but an intense personal interest. So they're not going to be looking for these guidance notes, or they're not going to be looking at the site of cycle research for that information as they begin. And it's the same with ASAP. I heard about ASAP from one of John Fraser's books while I was actually in the field. And I was like, ASAP, I never heard of them. And it was like, so then I looked them up and was like, oh, okay, scientific study of the novelist, fantastic, you know, amazing, exactly what I need. And actually, they're not what they portray themselves to be, as a lot of people think they're like all scientists in the lab. And, you know, it's not that at all. We're all just investigators with a very similar mindset who want to kind of investigate properly. You know, alongside like the Ghost Club. The Ghost Club is like a social ghost club all about the paranormal. You know, it's a lot more chill than you think, and they have conferences and stuff. So those three are the main, yeah, the main big three. And then obviously you've got the UK Paranormal Society and there's various smaller societies as well around. But how do we funnel the newcomers? Because the newcomers are coming off of things like TikTok and YouTube now. How do we funnel them in the right direction to go, here is the basics? And that's why I want to do, I've got lots of videos on my TikToks where it's like introduction to the paranormal. And it's 4 points really quick. Bang, bang, bang. It's like this, it's like this, and it's like that. And then there's a part two, part three. Introduction to the Estes method, introduction to Ouija boards, whatever, you know, thing that that people can look at really quickly and go, oh, that's a good idea. And then that's all they need to do. And it makes it easier to digest that information and almost become a pretty good investigator in a very small amount of time.
And how do you make those types of conversations attractive, you know, sexy, whatever it is that means they're going to go to that? Because let's face it, they're going to the information that is the stuff that's viral, that is being mm-hmm. mass consumed. And again, it's knowing that this stuff is also easily accessible. You mentioned great books. They're available through the SBR. You can easily get them on Amazon. You can get them in your mm-hmm. bookshop if you wanted to. These things yeah. aren't being kind of hidden away from you, from you as the public. Yeah. But you got to know that they're there.
that's it. You know, like with ASAP, ASAP are quite renowned in that sense. There's obviously the individuals haven't heard of them, but, you know, I had to read a book by, I didn't know John at the time. I'm good friends with John May, but at the time I didn't know John. And I just happened to pick up a book about ghosts and hauntings, and it was John's, and it was like, oh. And then I met him actually at ASAP. And it's like, I had no idea about that. But then that's because I still have a bookshelf in my living room and I still read books. The amount of people who don't read anything actually surprises me. And I find it quite strange that people don't. But at the same time, it's so arduous in comparison to looking through YouTube or TikTok or Reels on Facebook, or just absorb that information relatively rapidly and just carry on. I can understand why people would do it, and that's one of the reasons I've moved from, you know, academic type writing to pretty quick videos and trying to make them as entertaining as possible, trying to make them balanced so they're not too believerish or they're not too skeptical, you know, they're just in between, and make it a bit more fun, which is actually more difficult because it's not the reality, I think, of the paranormal is a bit more boring than what people think. And people just want to see the ghosts. Want to see ghosts. Now, I've got some fantastic footage of apparent apparitions and things and EVPs. But I can't be sure that they're ghosts. I can't be sure of the reality of them. So I don't really share that kind of thing publicly, even though I know people will eat it all up. And so it's just one of those situations where people want to see a ghost. And it's like, okay, if you want to see a ghost, that's fine. Go on a public event. And I know of public events that put on a show, and I know public events that 100% won't ever do it. And, you know, if that's what you want to do and you want to experience a ghost, that's fine. But don't start a team and start going around, you know, into these locations and messing around and thinking you're going to sort of see a ghost after 20 minutes of being in a haunted location. You know, if it was that easy, we'd be bored of it by now. But it is one of those where, if you're in it for the passion, you're going to find the SPR maybe slowly. You're going to find different contacts and different people and different pieces of knowledge. But I think from the TikTok generation, there's money in it. You know, there's money in finding a ghost. Whereas for me, on an ethical level, I can either go one, in knowing what a hoax is and in knowing how these things are done, I could create some incredibly realistic, you know, apparition videos or EVPs and all that kind of stuff. And I could use my reputation as a skeptic to be like, oh my God, like we've actually captured a what we believe to be a ghost, and this is how we've covered it, and this is how we know that that's exactly that. And I could have, you know, 100,000 followers by the next morning. But because ethically I love the paranormal and I love the idea that there is a truth out there, you know, for me, I will always remain on that, you know, let's do this properly, let's find the truth. But there's so many people out there who will just, you know, they'll happily set up some wires and strings and receive a whole load of money from multiple followers and all of that, which just adds to our fog situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think there is an element of people like to fit in and belong. And if there's something that's current and trendy or, mm-hmm. you know, again, unintentionally, you can get wrapped up in that. And I think an example of that is to do with things like, you know, there was a huge thing about black-eyed children and, you know, these figures.
Kind of chase thing.
Yeah, but also figures at the end of the bed, these black-formed mm-hmm. figures when someone's asleep, you know, sleep paralysis type moments. Mm-hmm. And I think it did. It kind of created this mass. I mean, there was a while there was a good couple of years where all you heard about was black-eyed children. And mm-hmm. but again, no science, no discussion about, well, what could they be experiencing in terms of their sleep patterns that could be explaining that sensation of feeling like something's sitting on their chest and they can't move, mm-hmm. or seeing something at the end of the bed. I mean, these are centuries old. If we look at mythology and we look at the hag and the variations around the world and how frequently this has been discussed in various forms and associated with ghosts and other phenomena, you know, let's talk about that. Let's really kind of go into some of that and the ins and outs. But for some people, it can be something they hear, something they see, and then again, they just then tie those two things together and it becomes fact. This is what I'm experiencing. And again, we go down that whole cycle of, well, then it becomes even scarier, which perpetuates the problem. And it becomes this ever-going cycle, again, with the lack of discussion around it and understanding and knowledge of what is happening, what they are experiencing in some cases.
And this is what I find with when you speak to someone who suffers with sleep paralysis and have done for most of their lives, it's not a paranormal situation at all. You know, they know and see and obviously experience what they see, but they know what it is. And so it becomes actually less of a scary situation that blows out of proportion because they experience it all the time and they have a full, almost medical understanding of what's happening to them. But sleep paralysis can be brought on by stress mm-hmm. and lack of sleep. You know, and let's all face it, none of us have a perfect life. Sometimes in our lives, dealing with going to work becomes a chore, you know, or, you know, having to go into a shop can become an anxious situation. But other times we can walk into the shop perfectly fine. It's exactly the same with sleep paralysis. We could just experience it. I think I've experienced it probably about 3 times in my life, all in, you know, stressful situations or when I've got sort of a lot of work on and I'm not sleeping too well and it builds up over time. But when you experience it and you know it and you understand it, it kind of isn't an issue. It's just one of these really like, oh, that was a moment. But for individuals who suddenly experience it out of nowhere, there's no other real explanation really to the logical mind that, oh my God, I've woken up and there's, you know, something stood on my chest. Or as you say, depending on the background. So like in America, there's a lot of abduction sort of scenarios that people go through that are being abducted by aliens.
Yeah.
You know, and the funny thing about the amygdala, which is what's causing the sleep paralysis, is it creates, while that situation is happening, it creates a hum noise in the back of your head. So the majority of people who suffer from sleep paralysis will say that there was a noise, and part of that hum noise becomes the spaceship to a lot of these US kind of experiences, because they can hear the hum of the spaceship in the background. It's not, it's your amygdala, your overactive amygdala that you can almost hear in the back of your head, which gives you that kind of that happens while it's happening. And also, it's terrifying at the same time, that noise. It's very odd, because it's almost like a horror film where someone's playing an off-key note in the background. You know, it builds that kind of fear. But when you think about situations like the old hag, so the old hag has been a scary sort of past thing for a long time. You know, the old witch who lives on her own and all those kind of things, sort of back in like the 50s and the 30s and so on. And even into Victorian times, go back to medieval times again, the witch and the old hag and that kind of thing. Like, people experiencing this old hag is down to, again, the cultural belief system at the time. And the same as the shadow man. So seeing the man in the hat and the cloak, you know, that's more sort of around the 70s and 80s. And it becomes more about fear. And actually, if you look at, say, pictures of Hitchcock, so you look at those, you know, the Hitchcock thing where it's got a silhouette of him with his hat, and that is kind of, that's renowned within horror at the time. So all of a sudden people are seeing this shadow figure who's wearing a hat and you can't see his features, it's just black. You could see the traces of the culture at the time working its way into the subconscious, and then coming out in that sleep paralysis situation where the subconscious is projecting those fears forward, because you are dreaming, but you're also awake. And for the individual, is terrifying, and it's 100% real. And I want any investigators sort of listening to this to understand that if even the hardcore skeptics and things, you have to understand that individual has experienced something which they believe to be paranormal. It doesn't matter what your opinion is or anything else or what it was, that person experienced that situation. They felt that situation. They were terrified by that situation. Like, that is a psychological and physical thing that's happened to them. And you have to respect that as a good investigator.
But it's honestly, it's so valid. And yeah, again, I don't think we kind of think enough about these cultural belief systems. And again, just the power it can have on individuals in circumstances, how it can filter through into experiences like sleep paralysis, mm-hmm. or just in terms of the, you know, an individual's psyche. And, you know, there are really tragic examples of how some of these really deep set cultural beliefs, like the hat man that you mentioned, mm-hmm. how that's then become something that's influenced young teenage children who in some cases have had, you know, a psychological break, mm-hmm. to do terrible, terrible things, you know, I mean, there's a case I know of where two teenage girls, one who clearly had a psychological diagnosis that was undiagnosed at the time, but mm-hmm. they murdered a friend, and they were teenagers, and they were completely embedded in that thinking of the hat shadow figure that they've been experiencing. And they've worked
the Slender Man one.
Yes, yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, you just think, again, it's kind of, that's an extreme version and an extreme example. But I think it shows just how we can all be very much influenced by some of those cultural beliefs and mm-hmm. things that are there. And again, it's part of the human condition to try and fit in to what is culturally around you, that's part of your community. Exactly. And if you're surrounded by people who think and believe in those things, you do too. Yeah, you know, it's very easy to. It's that simple. Look,
I think people forget that, you know, even on a caveman level, that because we've evolved so rapidly over a few centuries, that our brain hasn't evolved with us. We still, what we forget is things like we need community, we need friends around us, because our subconscious requires that, because if we don't have people around us, we could not survive on our own in the wild or in a situation. You need community and you need people around you to remain safe. And almost this generation, we've created a fake, an almost false sense of that through social media and this ability to communicate really quickly. You know, me being able to talk to you now, I've got AirPods on an iPad, and I'm nowhere near the iPad, and I've got both hands free. Like this time 20 years ago, people would be like losing their mind. Like, how is that even possible? Our brains can't keep up with that. And what we end up with in these belief systems, one, they move really fast, really fast. Even comedians these days really struggle to keep up with the requirement for new material all the time, because people just ingest it rapidly, you know. And it's the same within like horror films. They've got to be more scary and they've got to be more deluded and more gory and more everything. So we're kind of absorbing all of that, and then we're developing an almost resistance towards it, so it doesn't bother us too much on a very conscious level. But our subconscious is still able to absorb all of that. And as I said about those girls, the idea that Slender Man could be talking to say one of them, but one of them having the authority over the other, it doesn't matter about what the other one thinks. The other one just wants to be accepted, so she's just going to go along with whatever they say.
Mm.
And the same with the whole paranormal community. If you are an investigator who has 20,000 followers, people are going to go along with what you say. And with that comes, as far as I'm concerned, comes responsibility to do things right and ethically and everything else. But people like myself, I'm never going to have 20,000 followers. I'm fully aware of that. Because of the way I come across and the fact that I also take into account that ghosts might not exist. I'm not entertaining, I'm not any of those things, but I have a little bit of a following, which is lovely, and I have a platform, which is great, and I'm fine with that. But to the next generation of investigators that are coming through, it's who can get the most followers as fast as possible. Who can, because the more followers you have, the more community you can build, the more community you build, the safer you feel. And it's just this kind of utter madness that's going on, where these individuals who come in are quite happy to go so against the grain of the right way to do things that it all kind of falls apart.
And this is why I think it's, again, it's so important to have these kinds of conversations and to make people aware of other people and what they're doing and what they're thinking and what they're sharing, so that people can maybe discover something different. And, you know, I will make sure to absolutely put all of your details in the podcast description notes, etc., and on the website, so that people can come and find you. Because, you know, again, it's small things, it's small changes, it's being observant to these differences and different thoughts. And there's no right or wrong way. I think that is the key takeaway. One person isn't necessarily wrong and the other going to be right. It's okay to have a debate, to have different opinions. We're going to learn by working together as opposed to working separately. And that's just my personal approach and my personal thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I really appreciate you coming and sharing some of your knowledge and your insight and your perspective. I think it's really helpful for people listening to understand the wider picture.
Yeah, it's no problem at all. I think I like to take every opportunity I can, really, because I think we could make a massive difference in the paranormal community. Right, and a massive difference into research and finding the truth, whether that is that ghosts don't exist and this is all a human aspect, or actually the ghosts do exist in whatever form they might do.
Yeah. How can we prove it, or how can we get at least some more information? That's what it's all about for me. So honestly, thank you so much for your time. It's been such an enjoyable conversation. You are welcome back anytime to talk about any aspect. because it's honestly, I've just been enjoying chatting with you. So I hope other people listening will gain something from the conversation, really.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I'd absolutely love to talk about the paranormal. So,
and maybe what you need to do is, I don't know, pink tutu, wand, tiara. Yeah. I don't know.
Whatever it's going to take.
Yeah. Let's make it happen. We'll get you going viral.
That's it. I'll do anything.
Oh God, that would be entertaining.
It would be. There's no doubt about it. I'll probably never live it down. But
don't forget to throw in a cat though somewhere. I'm sure Bill could give you some and get it to pee on your rug.
Like anything, you know, just suddenly appear. But oh, there's a cat in this one. I like it.
Well, you know they are. They do attract people, cats and dogs. You've got cat a day, you know, all of this kind of trending stuff. So, yeah. But again, it's the ridiculousness of, you know, again, agendas and motives. But we're making fun of it. But it's part of the problem.
That's it. That's the issue.
Honestly, it's been so much fun talking with you. And I will say goodbye to everybody listening. Bye, everybody.